Hello and welcome to AFPT Comics Podcast, the number one comics podcast on AFPTComics.com, which people make fun of me for saying because there is only one comics podcast on AFPTComics.com. My name is David Brook and I'm here with Nathan Simmons. Nathan, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good. It's kind of similar to those, those Twitter things that go viral where it's like wrong answers only, but people don't understand how that works. So you have like someone posting a picture of like Booster Gold and Blue Beetle and it's like, who's this band? Wrong answer. Answers only. Like, there is no right answer. You've ruined the joke.
You've just made me feel so much smarter. Thank you.
Yeah, you're better than a Twitter meme.
Well, Nathan, you're on the show this week because Forrest is out, but I believe mm-hmm. Forrest will be back next week, mm-hmm. and we wish him well this weekend. Later in the show, we're actually going to have Scott Snyder on. We're going to be talking about Dark Knight's Death Metal, Future State, bunch of his indie books coming up. It's like a palate cleanser for Scott Snyder, I think, because we basically talk about the end of his mainline work at DC, even though he does say on the interview that he has more mainline books coming later half of 2021. But also like what's to come for his Best Jacket Press label, his focus on indie stuff, mm-hmm. and also closing the door on Dark Knight's Death Metal, the event that just ended this week. So stay tuned for that. That's later in the show. If you don't know, this is the comic book podcast where we recap the latest news of the week. We talk about the best books of the week and we look ahead to our most anticipated books out next week and basically try to dig into not only the industry, but what makes comics good and the art form itself.
Yeah.
Which is why Nathan's here, because you are like a curator. You're like the gallery curator of comics.
Oh, I don't know about that. I just retain a lot of nonsense.
Go to AFGComics.com and look up Nathan's work. He's got some of the best features on there.
Oh, thanks.
Some, heartfelt pieces, some interest listicles, if you like listicles.
Hey.
Nathan's your man.
Yeah.
You know, I never liked the word listicles because it reminds me of testicles.
Sure.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, no, it's not weird at all. I think it is a word we should all move away from.
Thank you. Yes.
But I'm glad that you enjoy my listicles.
I'm putting it in the vault right now.
Okay, cool.
It's not coming out on this show ever again. every show starts with the news, though. And the biggest news, in my opinion, of the week is Jeff Lemire on his newsletter, which I highly recommend you sign up for. He basically revealed not only does he have two new DC Black Label books on the way, literally being drawn as we speak, and yet he doesn't know when they're coming out.
Mm-hmm.
But he also let us know that Black Hammer is going to be zipping down to one title after not only there being, I think, three titles currently going or four titles going right now.
Yeah, and a ton of spinoffs and tie-ins. Yeah. And
some of which he's not even writing. He's just kind of curating.
Mm-hmm.
Among other things, too, he actually also revealed, and Bleeding Cool had the news on this one,
mm-hmm.
That he has some new projects on the way, like Project Jackknife and Project Pavement, which is interesting. So first of all, I want to say, again, if you listen to the Scott Snyder interview, we actually talk about Lemire and how busy he is.
Yeah.
Because it's some of these creators, I don't know how they have time.
Just never honestly. Slow down. Yeah.
Yeah. They just pump these things out. And if you've listened to the show before, Zach Thompson's been on and he talks about how he focuses on one title per week.
Right.
And that's how he like kind of compartmentalized the work.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is exciting news. Not to mention because, Lemire's work on Joker and DC Black Label was fantastic. So we're going to get more of those.
Yeah. I just recently read that, The Killer Smile, and I really dug it.
Yeah. Yeah, right? It was three issues, but they were in like large scale format.
Yes.
If you bought them in the physical format. Just beautifully done by Andrea Sorrentino. Yeah, this is exciting. He's also... I didn't even mention, he's got that Comixology book, Snow Angels, coming out, mm-hmm. Where he's collaborating with Jock.
Yeah, I mean, really looking forward to that.
Is this the year of Lemire?
I think it might be.
Someone write an expose.
It's just wild. Yeah, he doesn't slow down at all. There's just, he has another one, right? Like, what was it called? There was another project name. Bark. Project Bark.
I love it.
Which I hope is All Dogs, like a gritty All Dogs Go to Heaven reboot.
It's almost like those fake movie titles they have when they're shooting a film, so
Blue
no one
Harvest.
Can tell. Right. Next up in the news, Boom Studios is not done with Kickstarter. After their hugely successful Berserker Keanu Reeves project,
right,
which I think pulled in over $1 million.
Yeah,
they are now releasing, and it's currently on Kickstarter, and you can back it, a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers complete comic book collection set of six collections in hardcover, really cool looking, and
they're gorgeous,
like high quality bookcases. Yeah, yeah.
These transparent slipcovers are just fantastic. I really, it's basically like the DC Absolute Edition, but for Power Rangers nerds, and I'm all about it.
Do you read the Power Rangers books at Boom?
I'm way behind, but
yeah, but it's been going for a while.
Yeah, and there's lots of tie-ins. I've mentioned this on the show before. Tie-ins are like my downfall because I have such right. a hard time figuring out what I'm supposed to care about.
Right. Yeah.
But man, yeah, no, it's great stuff because it doesn't. It gets kind of gritty, but it doesn't get to the point where it's like we forget we're writing a book called Power Rangers. You know what I mean? So it's sure. there's always like a level of fun and kind of winking to the audience and respect for like the fandom, which is like still massive, even for like the original Mighty Morphin series. They're great books. I'm really looking forward to these.
Now, I know last time with Berserker, a lot of creators, particularly creators who are a little bit more in the indie markets, were annoyed because Kickstarter has traditionally been a place for folks to, you know, launch very small projects,
sure,
put a little money directly into their pockets. Whereas now we've got a major studio, Boom Studios, a major publisher, mm-hmm. I should say, now at $398,000 for this Power Rangers project.
Sure.
Which traditionally they would just put out and make money on.
Yeah. Do you think it's the incentive of putting together more of a like a nicer deluxe package for these, or what?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. If they can get money fronted, right? What you're saying, you can get a nicer end product.
But again, that does now that I mean, it does seem like the easier way to do that would be say like, okay, if you, it's kind of like a pre-order incentive.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
But it is odd though because that, like you said, the traditionally Kickstarter is meant for smaller businesses, smaller creators.
Right.
I mean, you don't see, you know, Dynamite selling books on Etsy.
No, you don't. Yeah. Traditionally, I think Top Cow has been doing this for a couple years now.
Yeah.
To get books launched. And I've seen indie creators like David Pipos, mm-hmm. like with Scout's Honor, which came out this week from Aftershock. That was a Kickstarter that essentially put money in his pocket and the creators' pockets, right. the artists and stuff, so they could launch it and then make more money when Aftershock publishes it.
Sure.
But yeah, it's definitely something to keep an eye on. I mean, if Marvel and DC start doing this, I imagine the outrage will grow exponentially.
And I can't imagine that being the case, but...
Yeah,
I actually hadn't looked at it from that perspective, but it makes sense.
Talking about Marvel, according to Bleeding Cool, Marvel's Star Wars The High Republic #1, which is a brand new series out this week, which is launching their prequel to the prequel movie universe, has sold over 200,000 copies of comic book shops, which is a lot.
Yeah.
Weeks ago, we were talking about the Department of Truth going over 100,000.
Right, yeah.
So this is even more than that. I mean, of course, this is Star Wars, so maybe there's a higher selling point, but mm-hmm. that's pretty high.
Yeah, and the people are scalping copies of it online, too, like the first run. It's so wild.
You know, it's sort of like, let me compare this comic book to Elon Musk.
I'm listening.
He this week became the richest man in the world simply because Tesla stock is insanely high. Some would argue way over what it's worth.
Right. But
because of this like hotness, as people are like, oh, this is going to be so big, similar to like Punchline at DC Comics, this comic, High Republic, is probably getting that, you know, the secondary market where people are snatching up the variants because they're rare.
The speculative market.
That's the word I wanted. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
So you're saying Elon Musk is the Punchline of billionaires?
Pretty much. Yeah. He was in Rick and Morty season 4. So, I mean, right there. There's your evidence. Oh, God. Moving on, though. Marvel also has revealed Luis and Walter Simonson will be taking on their X-Factor run again.
Yeah,
in
that's
X-Men
so cool.
Legends. Yeah, really cool.
I always get a kick out of stuff like this when creators get to like revisit an earlier storyline. I mean, that was one of my favorite things about the at Star Wars annual from like last year before last, when they revisited the classic Star Wars Legends series. Yes. The Vance the Hunter, or Valance the Hunter, and stuff like that. Yeah, I'm actually really looking forward to checking this out. I remember reading that run back in the day and really enjoying it. I mean, again, that's, you know, rose-colored glasses, because you...
Sure. It's well-timed, too, since they basically... I think they invented Apocalypse, right? Like, they created him. They
did, yeah.
So it's nice to see that they'll be writing another Apocalypse story, especially since Apocalypse is so huge today.
For sure. And it's... The Legends is like a rotating series, right? Like it's
different. Yeah, every issue is a different creator. I think Fabian I don't know how to pronounce
Nicieza?
His last name.
I always do it wrong too.
He's got the first issue with Brett Booth. Cool. But then Larry Hama, Peter David, and Chris Claremont are all going to get a chance to revisit a character or a story arc.
Pretty rad.
If you're looking at the cover, which is this news is on amputcomics.com, Iceman has this weird metal belt, and I want to know why.
Yeah.
Is that in the original run? Because I don't remember
that. But it looks like he's got a girdle.
I think this is the linchpin to their story arc. It's all about Iceman
trying out different accessories.
Yes, I was going to say body shame.
Sure.
But...
Oh no, not Bobby.
I know, exactly. And then Cyclops, like they all learn Apocalypse. You know, because Apocalypse can get very large and small, right? Like
sure,
he can change his body size. So maybe there's like a very like. I'm going to use the word poignant scene between the two. Sorry, I'm way off topic. But no, I think this is a really smart move because I do know that not everyone loves Hox and Pox in this new direction. So this allows fans, probably older fans especially, because they grew up with these stories to revisit the classic tales they love.
Yeah, for sure. I'm a little weirded out by Apocalypse's lack of... is that all one big tooth? In his mouth, or how does Apocalypse's mouth work? Can we get a Hickman graph on that? Like,
I know, right? Or like, why does he have tubes?
Right. Yeah.
I think that has been explained in X-Men Monday. Actually, Chris yelled at me one time for that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Someone. Oh, yes. Jordan. I'm recalling now. Jordan said something like, "It's like a vitamins or like amino acids."
Sure. Okay. All right.
A joke answer.
I respect that.
What's not a joke, though, is Kurt Busiek's The Marvels is finally coming out after almost a year delay. This is a new series where he's going to be exploring the entire universe to its maximum. I don't think it's in canon, but he is teaming up with Yildiray Senar on art. And, of course, the ever-famous Alex Ross doing the covers.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was delayed due to the pandemic, so we're finally going to get it.
Right, it was supposed to come out last spring, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of a book that's just kind of like, let's play with this whole sandbox that Marvel's given us and not really worry about stepping on anybody's toes. I love out-of-continuity stories and stories that don't particularly, aren't particularly worried about, you know, what's quote-unquote real and what's not. Which is one of the reasons why, I mean, we'll get into it later, but one of the reasons why the death metal finale worked really well for me.
oh, good.
So, I could see Alex Ross drawing Marvel heroes all day. It always makes me happy.
His output is insane. What is it, like one cover per day?
Yeah.
He's a machine.
Anytime he gets to draw the Human Torch is my favorite thing. I don't know what it is. I mean, the dating flames. Back to the original Marvels, it's just the flames are always so sick.
You can feel the heat on your face.
You can, yeah.
One thing to point out about this book to maybe hype folks up, the Golden Age Vision, also known as Arcus, is going to be a main figure in this series, which is a character that is super old, barely been used. So it'll be interesting to see how Busiek brings it in, and it'll probably eventually end up in the main continuity if this series isn't in the continuity. I'm not actually sure. But yeah, I've been excited for that for a while, and it's one of those books that Marvel keeps saying, it's coming, it's coming.
Well, and it's good to see a little bit more clarification of what the book is, because at first I thought it was basically like Grand Design all over again, which I loved. I loved Grand Design, but I was like, I don't need another book that gives me like the full history. Like I want to just see them do things now.
right.
I'm excited about that.
Next up in the news, Scott Snyder was on. Well, he will be on the show actually.
Yeah.
Wow. This is news I'm talking about that you'll listen to later. That's kind of weird. So yeah, from the interview, I actually wrote an article doing a little bit on Dark Knight's death metal, but since it came out on Tuesday. And one tidbit that he says in the interview, which I don't think has been reported elsewhere, but maybe it has. He basically confirms DC Future State, the event that just started this week with Elseworlds-esque new takes on our favorite characters, is actually going to matter. Some of the characters are going to come out of that event still alive and in continuity. Some of the events will be lingering on the characters' minds. And also Tim Fox, the new Batman, is also going to be carried forward in some way, shape, or form. So you might think, oh, it's just a big what-if two-month event. But in fact, no, Scott Snyder basically confirmed it will matter. Not all of it will, but a lot of it will.
Nice. That's exciting.
Which is exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the one thing everyone's worried about. Like, ugh, do I need to, like, read this weird Elseworlds flash and care?
Well, when it was first announced, everyone was like, is this Convergence again? Is this, you know, Marvel or DC's Age of Apocalypse? Like, what are we doing
here? And I mean, in the interview, too, again, I'm just talking about the same interview you're about to listen to. he does also say, like, this event is about being okay with the little nooks and crannies that don't make sense in the DC multiverse and continuity. And just taking it all and enjoying it and loving it. Speaking of Dark Knight's death metal, Yannick Paquette does one of the backup stories, the epilogue stories. So good. One of the best artists in the game. And it was revealed on his Facebook, which Bleeding Cool reported on, that he is done with his 10-year DC exclusive contract. Doesn't mean he won't ever work for DC again, but it made the news in part also because a lot of creators like J.G. Jones and Mikael Janin all commented and, you know, congratulated him. I'm sure he'll probably end up at Marvel sooner than we probably think.
Oh, you think so?
I mean, that's where the big bucks are, right? Well, maybe not. If you have a successful Image Comics series, you get rich fast, I suppose. But I imagine Marvel will pay extra for someone of his caliber.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he also has the Grant Morrison Wonder Woman book coming out.
Yeah, Earth 1, Volume 3.
Volume 3, yeah, the final.
Yeah, my dad's really hype about that. I have not read either of the Earth 1 volumes. I've heard I would enjoy them. I just never got around to it.
They're so gorgeous. I know the first one had some controversy, like, around sexism or something.
Yeah, that's what I heard, and I was just kind of, like, I kind of kept my distance, I guess. Also, I wasn't wild about... The only Earth 1 book that's really done anything for me was Green Lantern. I really enjoyed
it. Yes. Incredible team.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Titans was fine. it's just...
I wasn't into the Batman one.
No, it's okay. The less said about Superman, the better. But I was kind of like sour on the whole line. But maybe once the third volume comes out, I'll just read them all in one sitting.
Lock yourself in a room.
Yeah, right. It's Wonder Woman time.
Yeah. Have the new movie playing in the background.
No, thank you.
Oh, boy. Moving on. Do you like X-Men? Probably.
I do.
Dawn of X has been a huge success, of course. We just came out of Ten of Swords, which ended at the end of November or beginning of December. I forget exactly. Mm-hmm. And now the Reign of X is taking over Marvel.
Right.
And with it is new titles. Jonathan Hickman actually on X-Men Monday a few weeks ago confirmed there is at least one new book, and X-Corps is definitely on the table. But... Mm-hmm. Fans of looking forward to X-Corps news will have to wait another day because they revealed a new title called Way of X or Way of 10. We're not sure. Maybe it's Way, like protein Way. We're not sure.
Yeah.
Sorry, bad joke. Anyway, Cy Spurrier and Bob Quinn are taking on this new title, and it's going to be focused on Nightcrawler putting together a team.
Yeah, I'm into it. It's funny. I feel like every time I'm on the show, we have a little check-in on how Nathan's doing getting into X-Men again. Because I was all in for Hawks and Pox and all that stuff. I bought like the first couple trades, and then the pandemic happened and I just stopped. Like, I haven't, I'm so far behind, but I'm in love with everything that's being done with these characters. Yeah. I think, you know what? The last time I was on the show, I think was like right after Cable came out, the first issue of Cable, because I was super into it.
Yeah.
And I was like, who would have thought I'd love Cable now?
Kid Cable, no less.
Kid Cable. Yeah. I love Nightcrawler. All of the interior art that's been shared for this looks so dope. The image of Nightcrawler on the cover is so gnarly, like very metal, you know, yeah. jumping out with two swords and surrounded by smoke. And it's just, I'm, and the idea that it's a team of like, you know, second tier, third tier X-Men characters is great.
Yeah, and I suppose this is going to play into Nightcrawler's desire to create a new religion for Krakoa.
Right, yeah.
Which is fascinating on its own merits. But then the whole team aspect, which is I was not seeing coming,
sure.
Is exciting too. And there's a quote here from Cy Spurrier where he says, "The question is, what do they have to become in order to fight it? Preachers, cops, executioners, or something entirely new? This isn't a job for priests and prayers." So I assume he's getting into like supernatural Buffy layer of fighting. I don't know.
Which is interesting. Yeah. yeah. I mean, it's the, you know, they're, I, one of the things I've really enjoyed about the more recent X-Men books is that there's a genuine care and worry about what it would be like to found a new country. You know what I mean? Like there's,
yeah.
they have to put in all kinds of infrastructure. They have to like create laws, their own, you know, way of doing things. And this is looking at the, if we've been looking the vibe I'm getting from this book is if we've been looking at how the state is running things, this is the church. Like this is, this, right. this is what the church is up to.
Right.
And the fact that, you know, Spurrier's describing it as like a super psychedelic kind of feel has me really excited.
I can't help but think if DC was smart enough to keep him on Hellblazer, would Cy have time to do this series? It's like, would it have happened? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's the drama queen in me.
I'm so sad. Yeah,
yeah, it's a bummer.
Guys, go check out all 12 mm-hmm. of my Hellblazer reviews because
I think your lowest score was like a 9, I think.
Yeah, I couldn't not love that book. It's so perfect.
I remember you DM me one time and I'm like, look, I know this isn't necessarily a 10, but it's still really good. How do I approach this? I was like, okay, let's talk about this.
Yeah, because I think the first half of that run, I found no faults in anything. Like it genuinely is. Spurrier is one of my favorite writers in comics right now. I mean, this series could star
scratch that itch.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. I mean, this series could star, you know, just one of the Morlocks, like not even, you know, or whatever, and I'd still be like, oh, this is gonna be the best thing ever, you know.
Definitely a high point. I mean, Cy's coming off of not only Hellblazer, but also Alienated. So,
oh, sure. Yeah.
Like, yeah. I mean, he's one of the top-notch writers right now in comics, I'd say.
Yeah, there was this thing on Twitter recently because DC shared that Hellblazer had won, like, multiple awards.
Yeah.
And all the comments were like, that's cool. So you're going to, like, when's issue 13 coming out?
Right. It's weird, right?
Yeah.
They could have ridden that high of award winning.
I know.
Into the next arc or whatever.
Yeah. Well,
or just give him like an OGN sequel.
Give him a Black Label book.
There you go. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. Yeah, I'll cry about this later. We got stuff to talk about.
You're going to do that while reading the Wonder Woman three volumes.
I'm going to cry about John Constantine while
You have a lot of things to do all at once.
I do.
Speaking of a lot of things to do all at once, X-Men Monday is a fantastic column on AIPT, if you don't know. And it's where Chris Hassan gets to interview some of the top X-Men writers and artists of today. And also, you get to ask questions and get those answered via a survey on the site. And this last week, he had Benjamin Percy on talk about X-Force and Wolverine. And a bunch of little news tidbits came out. And we actually noticed Screen Rant took some of that news and renewsed our news.
Oh, cool.
And some of the news includes Solemn, one of the characters from Ten of Swords, is going to be coming back, which is good news since I remember prior to Ten of Swords starting, one of the X-Men Mondays, like every single writer, like Vita Ayala and Teeny Howard, one of their favorite characters was Solemn.
Yeah, I remember that.
And he has adamantium skin.
Yeah.
It's like an idea you think of when you're like 12 watching X-Men series.
Yeah.
Also in the news, in that last column, and again, I recommend you just read it, but here's a couple more tidbits. The Hellfire Gala seems to be happening in the summer. That's where characters fight to the death. And I believe the new X-Men roster will be revealed by then, which is another cool thing.
Yeah.
Percy knows Beast has been acting like a piece of shit, and it's all according to plan. If you don't like Beast right now, it's part of the plan. Also, in the news, Colossus is a big role to play across the line, which is a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah.
I think Hickman revealed in X-Men Monday that Storm will also be a big character in 2021. Percy is not done writing Jean Grey. Manslaughter will be appearing in X-Force sometime soon. And each X-Force character will be getting a spotlight, including Forge, Kid Omega, and Sage.
Nice.
So that's cool. And guess what? Jerry Dugan is going to be answering your questions on Monday, tomorrow, on X-Men Monday.
Nice.
So check that out. That's it for news. You know, it's funny. I said to you the other day, I was like, I think we're light on news, but that's a pretty good amount of news, I suppose.
Well, what's funny is you said that to me on Thursday. You were like, there's not a lot of news. And I was like, I guess not in comics, because like everything's on fire.
The world is on fire.
How about yours?
If you just put a you know, in your brain, put a buffer on world on fire, there's really nothing going on in the world.
No, yeah. If you just,
In our next segment, our top books of the week, we're going to talk about our top two favorite comics out this week.
Yeah.
Nathan, what is your second favorite book out this week?
My second favorite book this week was Future State Wonder Woman number one, written and drawn by Joelle Jones. It's just so fun. Like, I was trying to think of how best to describe this, and if anybody listening has played Hades on the Switch, it is, it's just that kind of swashbuckling fantasy adventure vibe, very much rooted in mythology. The dialogue is really fun and flirty, and occasionally just sort of sarcastically commenting on what's happening at the time. And it doesn't really weigh you down really at all with setting a scene. It just drops you in, introduces you to all the characters. And, I'm curious to see, because this is one of the, I mean, this, there's only gonna be two issues of this, how this like leads into future stories. Because I think originally when Future State Wonder Woman was announced, there was just going to be the one Wonder Woman title, and then I think they split it into this and Immortal Wonder Woman.
Oh, right.
But I may be wrong, but I'm looking forward to reading Immortal Wonder Woman as well. But yeah, it's just, you used the phrase palate cleanser earlier. It really feels like so much of Wonder Woman's story in Death Metal was... you know, the burden of power and responsibility. And then this story is very much like, hey, I'm a demigod. Let me just slice up some hydras, break into, you know, hell. Yeah. Hell is drawn like it's the kiosk to get into like the, like into a museum. Like there's just literally like a guy at a desk who's asking about, do you have your rewards card with you? Like, it's really fun and snarky. And it was just, I was smiling the whole time I read it.
It's so fun, yeah. And that's with Yara, I just had it and I forgot it. Yara Flor, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really excited for that character.
Me too. Yeah, it doesn't do a whole lot of table setting, but it's just a fun book. I'm looking one of the reasons why I'm looking forward to, I mean, spoilers, I'm looking forward to Justice League to see more of that character.
spoilers for this show.
Spoilers for, 5 minutes from now.
My second favorite book of the week was Dark Knight's Death Metal number 7 by Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo, and a ton of other people, including Yanni Paquette and Ryan Hitch on pencils.
Yeah, that was a nice surprise.
You had mentioned that in the news when we were talking. I didn't love every issue of this event by any means. I reviewed a lot of them. I didn't review all of them, but it definitely felt too big for itself at times.
Sure.
And it all led to a massive battle on a battlefield with heroes and villains of the entire multiverse fighting, which, you know, is a cool idea and it works here and there, especially in some of the anthology tie-ins.
Right.
And that's where this issue opens, on the battlefield, with a giant golden Wonder Woman fighting the Blackest Knight, which is the Batman Who Laughs Now, paired with the Dr. Manhattan powers. Right. That sentence is insane and shouldn't work. But I've been saying this in all of my reviews for the series, like, just turn your brain off. It's fun. It's an exploration of the big, loud, crazy, anything can happen thing in comics. Sure. I think that's Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, no, that's that was my biggest gripe with the event was that so much of the, and I think I told you a little bit about this off mic, was I felt like so many major events were occurring outside of the main book, in, you know, right, the tie-in issues or, you know, speed metal and all that stuff. And it weirdly coalesced for me here in the last, you know, the last half of the book, especially because it's a, like you said, it's running wild with all of these ideas. And ultimately I mean, I won't spoil it here, but the book is very much about how, about the power of ideas, especially in this final issue, is just like, it's so nice as someone who's been reading comics for the better part of 30 years to have a writer tell me, all those books you like, they still matter, you know?
Right,
like
right. It's just especially for DC Comics, which is traditionally been like, nothing matters before this, this is the new universe or whatever.
And I've been so, snarky about it in the past, especially with Rebirth, because I felt like there was a very cynical, Rebirth had a very cynical vibe to me where it was very much like, the reason these books have been bad is because of Dr. Manhattan. And I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but I was just like, well, no, you wrote that he did that. You know what I mean? Like,
you have
to take responsibility for the stories that you still, you know, sold to people. So, this was almost like the anti-Rebirth in a way, which I very much appreciated.
Interesting take. Yeah. And the epilogue kind of like closes the door, but also opens the door. I think succinctly too, like it's not bloated in the end. The ending is, I think it uses every page it needed.
Yeah.
And I think adding Brian Hitch on the last two or three pages, I forget how many,
was
smart too, because he has this sketchy, more old school style.
Well, yeah. And so much of a nice ending. Right. And so much of what worked on the recent Hawkman series was that the whole ethos of that series was it all happened. You know what I mean? So it just, there's something really beautiful about that. I don't know.
Especially in serial storytelling, right? Like these stories are timeless, but also never ending. And how do you like rationalize that?
Yeah. And it is odd because it's a event that, it hasn't worked for me the entire time, but, this last issue, I really got more out of it than I expected to.
So what is your number one book of the week, Nathan?
My number one book of the week was Future State. It's a DC love fest this week.
It is. It really is.
Future State Swamp Thing number one by Ram V and Mike Perkins, which is on the outset, you'd think it's the kind of story you've seen 1,000 times, you know, end of the world, especially with Swamp Thing. You know, they've done like Rot World and stuff like that, where you see what happens after the apocalypse with all of these kind of elemental characters. But it approaches it from a very character driven point of view, instead of it being this kind of like bombastic. You get the feeling that all the fire and brimstone has already happened, and this is just, you know, living after that.
Mm-hmm.
There's these gorgeous, you know, full page illustrations where of like an anatomy of these plant creatures that Swamp Thing has created to keep him company, and
how it works,
explaining how he like breathed life into them. And then it feels like something new, but it also feels like a callback to the whole character's history. I mean, it's a very Alan Moore like anatomy lesson vibe, while still telling this new story that has, it's weirdly sweet and emotional, and then at the same time very cynical, because you get the vibe that these characters only know what they've been allowed to learn. You know what I mean? And I'm very much interested in seeing how it all plays out, who sides with whom, and how this possibly ties into the new Infinite Frontier series, which I'm really, really looking forward to. Swamp Thing's one of my favorite characters in fiction. And I just, anytime I see, you know, something new with the character, it just feels like a revelation.
I can't wait to see how it dovetails into Ram V's main series as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was a deeply strong first strike, I'd say.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And like, again, like there seems to be a line wide level of care going into the future state books that I haven't felt in, you know, a lot of these kind of events before. You know, Future's End was a super mixed bag. Same with Convergence and, you know, all those other books. I've been very impressed with the Future State line.
I think we can probably thank Mary Javins for that. I think she came in around when...
Yeah.
Although she wasn't officially announced till later in the year, but I think she's been involved heavily with what's going on.
It feels cohesive, even though a lot of these don't necessarily cross over into each other.
Right.
Yeah.
My favorite book of the week was from DC Comics, and which, like you said, it's a love fest this week.
Yeah.
It's The Dreaming Waking Hours number 6 by G. Willow Wilson and Javier Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. Rodriguez is coming on for a two-parter here, and this is the first of a two-parter. First and foremost, I've loved this series from the start. So it's no surprise I liked it, but then, you know, Rodriguez brought a whole new kind of art style to it that is exploring 3D space, exploring layout design, in really intriguing and cool ways. Every single person I've talked to in the last week and a half, I've just been like, you need to read this just to see the art.
Yeah, and it does. Rodriguez does it in a way that doesn't sacrifice the kind of storybook fairy tale vibe that Dreaming has gone for, which is really interesting.
She's up there with one of the best artists today. He doesn't do a ton of work, but maybe because it takes ages to make such great work. I don't know. This is also a really good issue for the series because it takes a character that did something that's costing them in this issue.
Right.
Magic, basically the main point of the issue is like magic costs something every time. And there's a human sorceress that is the main character of this issue that pays a price based on something she did in the last arc. It's also checking in on the characters that, the new characters that were introduced in the first story arc, but also characters that we're familiar with. And Willow Wilson, once again, like, I just love these characters. I feel like they're very human and real. And, you know, at a time when we can't hang out with people really in real life, it's nice to have The Dreaming Waking Hours.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I highly recommend checking this out. Even if you haven't been reading the series,
like,
Rodriguez's art is what makes it so anybody could read this and just enjoy it straight up.
Nice. Yeah.
So those are our favorite two books each for this week. Yeah. In our next segment, top books for next week, we're going to talk about the number one book we can't wait to read and probably will and probably go on Twitter and talk about.
Yeah.
What is the most anticipated book of the week for you?
For me, it is, we're just rolling right along with Future State Justice League number one.
Yeah.
By Josh Williamson, Ram V, and a whole host of other people. I, like I said, I loved the first issue of Wonder Woman. I really enjoyed the next Batman, even though it was a much slower, like a more deliberately paced book than I was expecting. But I'm excited to see how these worlds kind of tie into each other. And it seems like it's going to be kind of a time spanning storyline, which again is very much in Williamson's wheelhouse. And then the main reason I'm excited for it, which I'm sure you expect, is the backup is a Justice League Dark story.
Yep.
So Zatanna, Detective Chimp, who is like Etrigan's host now in this version. John Constantine, Madame Xanadu, all these characters fighting against Merlin. Written by Ram V. I mean, that's like a recipe for me being hype for a storyline. What's interesting is it seems to be there's not a whole lot of details about the storyline, but the idea is that magic has been outlawed or something like that in the future DC universe. So curious to see how those characters deal with being on the run.
It's like the police state just can't let anything go.
No. Yeah, right.
My most anticipated book next week is also a Future State book. It's The Dark Detective number one, which is by Mariko Tamaki, Dan Mora, and then there's a grifter backup by Matthew Rosenberg and Carmen Giodomenico. Carmen's done a fantastic job also with Flash, too, and the style is very... Yeah. You just know it's their work when you see it. It's,
absolutely.
It's got a lot of energy to it that's really cool. But yeah, this is my most anticipated book. in part because I've read it already, so I know it's really good.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I'm reading Justice League right after we finish recording today.
Enjoy. Yeah, if you don't know, AAPT has gets review copies from DC in advance so we can cover this stuff timely.
Yeah.
But the whole like Blade Runner-esque nature of Gotham and is really cool to me, really fascinating to me. Obviously, it's an inversion of the darkness that is Gotham usually. And it continues on in this book. If you like Bruce Wayne, definitely read it. But it's kind of showing us the other other side of the coin when it comes to Batman, because there is the next Batman title as well that's going on at the same time. And then the Grifter story, I mean, if you like Rosenberg's work, if you've liked his Punisher work, you're going to like this backup.
I love Rosenberg. And I don't know if I've ever mentioned this, but I love Grifter.
You do?
I fully blame being a 90s kid for this, sure. But anytime he pops up in a book, I'm hype.
The look with the mask that flops in the wind is just like,
great. It's really cool. It's a great look. And there's a reason why it has never been updated. I remember when the Flashpoint Paradox animated movie came out and my dad and I were watching it. Grifter pops up in one scene and I lost my mind. Funny. I was just like, why is this 90s ass looking guy is running around with these, you know, bulky, you know, crazy superhero designs. It was just, man, really loved that.
It was definitely a selling point of Wildstorm when they launched, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
In our next segment, Judging by the Cover, Junior, we're going to talk about our favorite cover art of the week. And if you look at the feature image, you can see our cover art right there. It's also in the AIPTComics.com podcast post in full. My favorite cover art is Future State Dark Detective number 1 by John Paul Leon. So this was revealed months ago, I feel like. And it's just so cool. It's Batman standing in the rain. You can see light kind of coming through the skyscrapers behind him. But the gear he's wearing is unconventional for Batman. It's not all sleek in a yellow little belt that with like little capsules. Yeah. This is like, he's got rope everywhere. He's got clearly like grenades of some sort just sticking out bulky. This is like a militia kind of thing. Like he...
This was my second choice, honestly. Like, yeah, but then it's so good. I love Leon's.
It's also
work,
like void of color, except for this yellow bat symbol on his chest that he clearly like was kind of just like stenciled on.
Right.
But it's very moody too. It's not just because it looks cool. Like Batman looks a bit, he's rugged and also like a bit tired almost even in this shot. And it actually suits the story within because, you know, Batman's in a tough place. What is your favorite cover out of the week?
My favorite cover has been, my favorite cover is Blade Runner 2029 number 2 by Peach Momoko. It has this sort of, how's the best way to describe it? It's got, it reminds me of almost pop art mixed with Drew Struzan's artwork, like old school, like film posters and stuff. Like the original Blade Runner poster. Mm-hmm. It's full of color. The pose is really cool. I mean, it doesn't feel like the rest of the series in a way. Like it's very striking. Mm-hmm. There's just, I don't know. I really don't know how to, it sucks sometimes because I don't know how to describe it other than it's rad. You know what I mean?
You should check out her, Peach's Twitter is really cool because she'll show the work on the table. And you can see I don't think she works predominantly in digital. She's working with like watercolors and stuff. And it really is. I mean, every cover is a work of art. She's like Alex Ross in some way. She's so quick, but also.
Yeah.
It's just stunning.
It's almost like it's got kind of almost a 2000 AD vibe to it too. It's just, classic sci-fi. I love it.
That's it for this segment. In our next segment, Scott Snyder's going to be joining me to talk about lots of things like we talked about at the start of the show. Death Metal, Future State, his indie projects. Hope you enjoy, and wear your mask.
Yes, please.
Okay, so on with us is Scott Snyder. Scott, how you doing? Thank you so much for joining the AIPT Comics podcast.
Oh, man, I'm so happy to be here. I look forward to talking to you all the time, and I always enjoy these, David.
Happy New Year. Oh, my God, this is the start of what could be the year that puts you on the map.
I know. I'm very excited, yes. No, I honestly... I'm just happy that that we've made it out of 2020 alive, all of us. It's been such a
crazy year,
such a terrible year, and you know, again, it's a testament to the the strength of the community, I think the comics are doing as well as they are right now.
They are, yeah. I mean, I think they might be up a little bit, depending on how you look at the numbers. You know, one thing that got us through 2020 was Dark Knight's Death Metal, which wraps up this week. Are you excited for the finale, for people to read it?
I am, yeah. I'm sad and excited and all of it at once. It marks the end of like a real era for me and for DC as well, but in an exciting way too. I mean, you know, it's the last superhero book I'll be doing for a while, for at least the better part, I think, of the first half of 2021. So it's the longest break I'm taking for superheroes in like 10 years. But more importantly, I think I really believe in the vision that Marie Javens has for DC. I mean, she's been one of my closest friends there for years. She edited Justice League, and she was with us, you know, all the way back with the looking at the end of the first Metal and all of it. So she's been just, you know, like a genuine friend who, when she's in town, we see each other here on the East Coast and all that stuff. So she's been someone who I think couldn't be a better pick for kind of for the captain of the ship right now at DC. She's got all the kind of vision, I think, about being bold and fresh and daring, and also has been in the industry for 20 plus years and respects the past in such a way that her ideology and I think her approach to DC is a big extension and expansion of a lot of the things that she helped us bring to Metal, you know, where it was very much about everything mattering. It's about honoring the past, making sure that all of it is part of what these characters remember and what the line embraces. Good and bad, all of it. And then using that kind of set history to blast forward in a way that opens up all new frontiers and allows us to be more progressive in terms of our storytelling than I think we've been in a long time. So it's like the best of the New 52 and Rebirth together.
Yeah, there's a lot of hope. There's a lot of positivity right now, I think, at DC, especially with, like, you've got DC Future State coming. Dark Knight's Death Metal is ending now, and you know, I got a chance to read it early, and there's such a hopeful message by the end of the book, which I think that joy is something that's so inherently part of DC Comics. And, you know, your event, like you were just saying, it celebrates comics. It celebrates almost every bit of history of DC Comics, and it does so in this giant, you know, boisterous way. How do you feel about the event and how it's panned out? Like, has it come out exactly as you envisioned? Did the pandemic kind of change the course a little bit?
Oh, it's been a wild ride, man. Like I feel like, okay, talking more off the cuff, you know, when we planned it back in 2017, 2018, when we were doing the first Metal. And I always saw it as something, if the first Metal was kind of a test of whether or not fans would get behind this kind of aesthetic and this big over-the-top bombastic kind of, let's go back to the semantics of Infinity Gauntlet and Secret Invasion and that kind of over-the-top fun lunacy, Kirby-esque kind of balls to the wall nuttiness of comics, while still doing something personal within that. That, you know, that story was very much about the darkest moments in your life when you feel you're represented only by the worst versions of yourself. Batman sees for the first time, he gets scared for the first time when he looks at himself and sees all the ways in which he might fail. It's like someone on a high wire who suddenly looks down. And, you know, that's the feeling. I've certainly gone through depression and anxiety in my life, and that feeling of all you look around and see are terrible versions of yourself, and you don't see how the one that you've always recognized is what you thought was the real one, the one that you were proud of in any way is substantive at all. All those are substantive. The world becomes this kind of funhouse, hall of mirrors of ugliness about you and the world and the future. So it was that, you know, it was a testing ground for that. And because it did well, I wanted to do something that was more outward looking at this point about comics. And when we set out to do it, you know, it was, you know, rough times. And the idea was to do an event that would say, and it's rough all over the place. I mean, it's hard to juggle all the things that are sort of in your head when you're doing an event that's all encompassing like this. But some of it's about the world, the divisiveness, the anger, the ugliness, the cruelty, all the things that are being embraced, I think, or were being embraced for really, really loudly. And then there's also, it's about the comics in the way that I think there are these kind of, this anger at the idea that whenever we try something new or we try and push forward or try and do a story that ventures into new territory, there can be pushback. And all of it sort of kind of becoming the main pillar thrust of the event that would be about a world essentially where Wonder Woman, who's the harbinger of truth, you know, saw the truth, which was that all of these knots in the timeline, all of these moments at which villains have tried to make this moment more important than any other and disregard the past, disregard the truth, say all that matters is your perception of the world right now, history doesn't matter, that all of these things were false, and that the only way to kind of move forward in a bright, hopeful way is to untie those knots and to allow the entire sort of DC history to exist, even if only in the characters' minds. And then to use that as a kind of launch pad for the brightest, most expansive, infinite future that we could build at DC. And so that was always the plan, but there's so many changes. I mean, and by no one's fault, it just because giant machinations between AT&T and Warner Brothers and DC and all of it. I mean, Dan was fired and Dan.
That came out of nowhere. I was so surprised.
Oh no! And I was away with my family. I felt terrible. I hadn't taken a vacation with them in a long, long time, and we had this family vacation where we were in Hawaii. And I was literally on a whale watching boat for the first time in my life, and I was tweeting about whales, and we got fired. Terrible.
Right.
Like calling me, and I'm like, I'm not answering any DC calls. I'm like, just out here on a boat floating around. And I felt terrible, but
crazy.
You know,
timing.
It was like. Yeah, there were a lot of people were let go, some of whom were really close to me, Mark Doyle, you know, some of whom were supportive of metal, some of whom were not supportive of metal, all kinds of crazy stuff. But the whole period, you know, what was at the end of metal was constantly changing too. There was a whole initiative that was going to be, about bringing this new generation of characters in, and there were things that were exciting about it, things that were difficult about it. You know, then we weren't going to do that. Then we were going to do that. And then there was like, well, during the 2 months, you know, 2 months in November, December, can you guys take over the whole line while we build that? So there was at one point there were going to be like 50 crossovers. And that really, you know, was not something I was excited, but I was also really wary of that. So the point I'm trying to make is just that the volatility of the last couple of years while we were building it, both internally and externally, was always kind of a challenge. But I think the thing that we always felt was that if we stayed true to what it was about, it's what we believe about comics genuinely, that ultimately we're all in it together. Ugliness and cruelty has no place. Exclusion has no place. And there's nothing threatening about both respecting the past, building on it to do something new that you haven't seen.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. Like the whole event structure, you know, it seems to shift and change, but sometimes it maintains the same thing, especially at like DC and Marvel. And seeing how this shook out, where a lot of the tie-ins were anthology comics. You just said something where there was a lot of tie-ins. Did that idea get reduced to anthology storytelling instead of bringing it out into, you know, 2 or 3 issue tie-in comics?
There was a lot of it back and forth. I mean, it went from, there was a point at which, and I don't know how much this is interesting to people, but just to be totally honest, I mean, there was a point at which we didn't know how to sort of fully support from a story standpoint what was coming at the end of Death Metal. And I didn't know how to bend it to make it happen because it was at odds with the messaging in some way. And so we were at that point, they really were kind of, they were reductive about what they wanted metal to do with Death Metal. So it was more about like, well, look, just be more self-contained and you'll do the mechanism that starts everything at the end, but you don't have to do a lot of tie-ins because we'll focus more. And I was great, whatever you need. And we'll be publicly supportive of everything you're doing as always. You know, there's no, it wasn't like I thought it was offensively bad. It just, it had different priorities than we had, you know, in terms of what we had planned. There were a lot of good ideas in it, but still, it just wasn't easy to sync up. It's like having something that is supposed to have one kind of ending anyway. Yeah, so at that point, we were very small and had less stuff than we have now. And then we wound up kind of figuring out a solution to all of it. And then it started, also the book was doing well, and they decided they wanted to expand it. And so then at one point they said, you can do, almost like a whole month of take over all the DCU. And then we planned for that. We had a meeting out here.
Oh man, that's a lot.
It was at my house. I know it was crazy. So yeah. It was like, that's, you can go back and see the pictures and social media. You know, we had Marie and everybody out to my house. It was a lot of fun. We just had Quinn. So we couldn't really go. I couldn't really go anywhere. He had a surgery, a craniotomy, because he had some difficulties, health issues when he was born.
I saw that. Yeah. That must have been so hard.
It was crazy. And then the pandemic hit, but they came here right before the pandemic. And so we planned a lot of it that way. And then we all felt like when Dan left and what Marie had planned was really so much more in the spirit of metal. Mm. It felt like what we could do is create a really good middle ground, like something that would be enough supplementary material that wouldn't feel overwhelming and would really sort of also underscore some of the messages of death metal. And then at the same time, would give enough that if you really wanted a more robust read, you could have that experience. And like, if you look at them, we tried to really curate it carefully. Like the book, I've never collaborated with Jeff Johns before, for example.
Oh, that was one of the best too. That was so good. Superboy Prime, I think.
Yeah. It was really interesting because Jeff and I, it's not like we didn't communicate at DC. We had a lot of contact, but we had a lot of ups and downs over the years. You know, we didn't, there were times where he was in a CEO role and it was difficult to find ways of coordinating. Sometimes we tried to get close and there was a moment we were going to tie in Batman and Justice League and do a whole event. We couldn't because of timing. So we kind of been circling each other for years, and we've had, we've had moments when we've tried to collaborate and other moments when we've been at odds and stuff like that. But ultimately with this, we've come to a really good place together. And, I have tremendous respect for what he's been able to do with the DCU and his sensibilities with these characters. And so I approached him and said, listen, like, what if we just give it a shot? And what this is about, this book will be about, is it's about showing how we can pass the torch to the next generation of creators and say, what we, without trying to control or manipulate what they're doing, show the greatness of the past and all of it, and that so much of what's great about the past is the way that it gives to the future in that way. And he was on fire with it. I mean, all everyone liked about that issue, give credit to him, please. I mean, I was more following his lead with it, and you know, it was a blast getting to work with him. And at the same time, the anthology issues were very much about like Last Stories, right? Last Stories was about bringing in sort of a lot of giants and a few new people to shepherd these characters through their last night, you know, and it would be stories that were really about what they would do in their private moments if they only had a day to live. And then to do the ones that are the big battles, which lead to the next thing, we wanted to bring in a lot of new talent. So we have people you might not have read extensively before, from Regine Sawyer to Shay Grayson to, Mags. So just a lot of new voices. So the idea was to try and put our money where our mouth is with the event and say that we're about sort of celebrating and embracing what DC has been, and then not being afraid to expand and to welcome in all kinds of emergent and exciting, bold storytelling for 2021, and to get out of the way a little bit, which is what I'm
doing. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
With oxygen at DC.
It's amazing how fluid it all is. I bet you listeners are like surprised. Like they probably think it's all set in stone like a year and a half ago. And in fact, well, especially with the pandemic, but in fact, it's usually like jazz in a way, isn't it? You're kind of figuring out where you can plug holes and where you can kind of explore. One question I had was Yannick Paquette and Brian Hitch always part of the plan to be finishing off Death Metal number 7?
Yeah, well, they both were people that we had spoken to about doing supplementary material in death metal and key parts, because Yannick did Batman Lost with us back in the first metal, so it was exciting to bring him back in. And then Brian had done this Wonder Woman story with me back when we were doing sort of the generational history of the DCU in a more thorough way before that kind of changed. And so he and I had talked a lot about Wonder Woman ideas and who she was and what we thought about her and how what things we really loved. So they were both people that we had planned on bringing in different capacities. But it was when we got approval from Marie to do the extended final issue that I was
It was originally 6 issues, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's 7. It's 7 issues.
Oh no, but it was originally slated for 6.
Yeah, that changed too. When they first asked me to do it, they asked me to do 12, and then they asked me to do 6, and then they asked me to do 8, and then they asked me to do 7.
That's funny. Like,
but it never was written that way. By the time we wrote it and drew it, we knew exactly how long it was going to be. So there's no kind of like, oh, this is, you know,
right.
Gonna be this. But yeah, it's been a wild ride, and I would say to creators out there, like, you know, as a teacher, the thing I love about comics is the fluidity sometimes and the collaborative spontaneity of it in that regard. And other times it can be the worst thing where you're dealing with structural changes and people that you love leaving and all this stuff. You know, that it was a really crazy couple of years. And, you know, I wouldn't, as much as I'm so proud of the event and so happy with the state of DC in terms of its leadership and now, there's so many people that we don't have anymore there that I wouldn't trade this for that. Meaning I would trade this to go back to that, even though I'm just, cause I miss them, you know, Doyle and so many others that I think are great. But what I'd say is what we have now, I do really believe in it. I feel, I'm glad we are where we are. And I think what Marie is going to do speaks to a lot of the priorities of what she helped us build with Metal. And I think there'll be a real confluence, you know, between Future State as a glimpse of all the kind of possibilities that we get flashes of. And then a lot of that stuff in Future State is going to come to fruition. Some of it won't, but some of it will come to fruition in different ways. Like it'll be a warning the heroes are working towards, even if they're not aware of it. It's something that you'll see them, even if the heroes are not aware of it, it'll be something that's kind of haunting the story. Other ones will literally happen, like Yara Flor and you know, Tim Fox later down the line, not exactly the way you see in Dark Detective and the next Batman, but there is a plan to sort of roll in different ways parts of Future State. So there is a relevance to it in terms of some of the things coming true, some of the things being big conflicts to avoid, all that stuff. And then Infinite Frontier in March.
I was surprised that popped up in the 7th issue. I was like, oh my God, they've got it in there. And we're going to have this 2-month layover until that starts, right?
Yeah. Well, a lot of it was like just getting your ducks in a row, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think a lot of it was like, you know, there were a lot of moving pieces. And when Dan got fired and they were bringing in, you know, Daniel Cherry and restructuring, I think we were just waiting to see what the initiative was going to be. A lot of us, like, what are we going to do? You know, what's the marching orders? And what's been great about the environment at DC right now is that everybody above, and I'm not saying this blowing smoke, everyone above seems very supportive of the comics core of people there from Marie down. And
that's great.
So there does seem to be a lot of support for us doing what we do best and letting us build something. And so Infinite Frontier came out of that exuberance. Honestly, it came out of, well, now that we know what we want to be as a company and as a line, how do we express that in an issue the way Rebirth did and in the way that, you know, we've done in the past with these things. So Rebirth was kind of the model, and to say, let's do one issue, but instead of us just doing it, me and Josh and James or anyone, let's invite everybody to be a part, or as many people as we can fit, the people kind of running the different groups, and have them at least have input in it in different ways. Different artists, and do something that says, this is what we're about. Here are the mysteries. Here's what's different. Here's what's the same. Here's some new pieces. Here's some classic pieces. This is what we're doing to sort of move forward into 2021 in one spot. So it came from this kind of consolidation of all the things that we'd like to do this, but can we do it? Can we, you know, how much room do we have? How many books are we doing? All that stuff as it came together was like, we got it. We love it. Infinite Frontier. Let's celebrate it.
I've been lucky enough to read a lot of the DC Future State books already, and I'm just floored with how well the world building seems developed. Like, I could see this universe lasting for a long time, and yet I know it's finite. It's only 2 months, but like you said, it does continue a little bit. Also, I'm so excited for Josh with Infinite Frontier and, like, seeing what he does.
I wish I could – wait till you read Infinite Frontier 1. You'll see where he's headed. or zero, I guess, is the issue that we're all right. But his plans for it and what he's building to with that as a kind of pillar of the next year and things that come back around the way we did with metal, but not with me, is huge. You know, he's, you'll see. But you get to the last few pages of Infinite Frontier Zero and you'll see what he has planned. So March is going to be huge. I really, you know, I'm really glad the way that I think DC is, you know, we kind of really were searching for a little bit about, or not searching, but at least, you know, hoping that we would be able to be the thing that a lot of us thought we should be for the last couple of years in terms of, you know, focusing in a good way on both classic characters, classic stories, but and established talent, but also make a big initiative to bring in new people and try new things and marry those things in a way that weren't, you know, that weren't at odds. And I think what Marie has planned and the way the line looks really celebrates that. So I'm thrilled, you know, even if I'm not a big part of it for a little while. I have two big projects there that are, they might come earlier than later. I don't know. I'm taking a couple of months to just really work on my creator own that I've been building, kind of squirreling away so that I can announce in the spring a whole bunch of delivery dates for a lot of books. Like essentially what I'm going to do is like, you know, I've been teasing a lot of stuff, the Francesco Francavilla book, the Francis Manapul book. You have another, the Return of Witches and stuff with another thing with Jock also that's prose oriented stuff with new talent, like for me at least, new talent, Ariella Cristantina, and all of this stuff in the spring is we're gonna do like a whole. I want to do like a whole.
Just do your own convention, your own digital convention.
Yeah, like a whole deck, and be like, well, just do a whole deck and be like, all the books. They're all underway right now. And
Night of the Ghoul is one of them too, right?
What?
Night of the Ghoul?
That's the Francesco one. Yeah, that already has like almost 40 pages. So we're huge into it. I mean, it's really the only reason I'm not talking about them is because I want to announce all of them at once in the spring and be like, or at least announce a bunch of them and announce them in waves and be like, here's the books we're coming out with in summer. Here's the books we're coming out with in winter and just show you everything at once as opposed to this kind of drip. And so I'd like to kind of go quiet for a bit, come back in a big way, even though we have Nocterra in March, which I can't wait for. I'm really thrilled with that one.
You have a lot of irons in the fire, like more than ever, maybe.
It is. I've never been.
Undiscovered never... Country, American Vampire, the ones you've already mentioned.
It's too crazy, man. I know. It's. I don't know what it was. I think it was the pandemic, man. It really, you know, it was scary in March of last year when everything started to close and shut down. And it made me really go back and look at the things that I wanted to do badly and be like, I can't wait. Like I can't wait another 2 years to do, I have to do them all. Like I want to do them all. Not because I think things are going to close, but
you're reminding me of Stephen King when, he had that accident with the van and and then he realized I need to finish Dark Tower. I like need to work faster. Like, right. Cause he was kind of dragging his feet on that.
I know, and Greg is always, Capullo, who I love to death, is a big brother, is always talking about age. He's always like, he always thinks he's
like, he's constantly posting about his weightlifting, and he's like, but I'm old.
I know, he won't stop. I'm like, dude, you're not that old. You know? And not only are you not old, but you're like in better shape than I've ever been in my life, so stop. But you know, it's in your ear, and you're like, you know, we had Quinn, and I'm a dad of three, you know, I gotta go for it this year, so I feel like it's about really trying to push myself creatively and you know, put my money where my mouth is the way I'm trying to say with metal. You know, if metal's all about taking bold steps, if what the DCU is going to be, then if I'm going to go back and do like, well, I could do more Batman or I could do, you know, another character at DC right now, I'd rather take a minute, do some stuff that surprises you, hopefully for me, some stuff that you're expecting from me. And then,
for all you know, you'll be hungry to do another DC character.
Oh, yeah. And I have.
After all that.
I have these two projects with DC characters in the superhero world lined up. It's just a matter of like taking a breather for a minute and being able to do my stuff. Are those
Black Label books? I know Jeff Lemire this morning in his newsletter said he had two DC Black Label books that he doesn't know when is going to be revealed, but they're in the works.
And they're great. I know that
you're about them. Nice.
Yes, they're awesome. I'm not sure if they'll be Black Label. I know one of them, one of them was scheduled as a Black Label book, the more Nightwing one, but then I'm not really sure. So I don't know what the organization will be at that time. Like, it might be more mainline at that point, or it might not be. So both of them.
You sort of segued me perfectly to one of my bigger questions. When you're talking about, you know, having another kid and, you know, getting to your indie stuff, you know, you've been working comics for over a decade now. And I was curious, you know, if you were to map out your career over 100-meter dash, where would you say you were? How many meters are you into your dash? And what is your record-beating moments that you'd like to look back on and go, oh yeah, I just broke the record there and there. And then also, where do you see yourself? And I'm just going to throw out some numbers at 75 meters, 95 meters, and 100 meters.
Oh, wow. Man, well, I hope the 75 meters and 90 meters is when I'm like that old. You know what I mean?
Right.
I really, I still feel very young as a creator. I mean, I feel one of the things about working in superheroes is that, you know, you're always triangulating. And what I teach my students always is like, you have to always be the most exciting writer to yourself and as much as you can be, you know, in terms of your needs in life. But I've been in a position where I've been able to follow that. And I hope fans can see that, even if they haven't liked everything I've done, that I've tried to follow the compass of never going back and doing the same thing twice. Even with death metal, it's meant to be quite different than the way we handled metal and you know, a totally different structure. We could have just had the Batman attack again, you know, and done the same story twice and walked away with money for it. But you know, everything has been trying in a way to push yourself. So for me, I just feel like I've been in one area, one neighborhood for 10 years. And I've tried all these different things, you know, from small, quieter stories like Black Mirror or, you know, all wacky outside stuff like All-Star Batman to events. And now I'd really like to ongoings, you know, this, and now I'd really like to try my own stuff. And in that way, I feel brand new. I feel really young and hungry, you know, and the ways I'm trying to do it. And you and I are friends, so I've spoken to you privately more about some of the methodology for it, some of the ways I'm trying to even shift up the way I'm structuring books, the way I'm distributing books, the way I'm going to release books, the way all of it is meant to be exciting. So I want it to be something where everything is a different challenge, you know, whether it's doing a book that's more prose than graphic, whether it's, you know, as one of the indie books I'm doing, one of the books being historical fiction than bombast, all that stuff, you know, trying everything that I haven't tried at once. So I feel really young. I mean, I know I'm not.
Yeah, you're not burned out. You're not leaving, you know, the mainline books right now because you're sick of it and tired of comics. It sounds like.
Oh, no, the opposite. Yeah. The opposite. I mean, and Marie and I talk all the time about, like, that she knows what I'm working on and all that too. Like, and we're all excited about everything together. I mean, so for me, it's like, I would hope that I'm only on like the 25-yard line.
25? Okay. Nice.
That's what I would hope, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so at least I have, I don't know, that would put me at what, in my, if it adds, if I have 30 years left and I'm in my, yeah, 70s. So that would, yeah, I mean, yeah, maybe 20 yard line.
Put it back, you know, a little bit more.
Yeah, that's kind of the hope, you know? And I have stuff I want to do at Marvel eventually, all those kinds of things. I hope if people have me back, you know? I mean, it's more just the, yeah, trying to stay new and fresh to yourself. And
I'm just waiting for that press release from Marvel that's like, Scott Snyder to take on, I don't know, Spider-Man.
And I have a lot of stuff.
Not be surprised.
There from, I have a, you know, Captain America thing I've had forever and a Hulk thing. And
yeah, on the show a year and a half ago, you were talking about your horror Hulk idea, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, but I mean, Immortal is so good that now I'm scared of taking Hulk for a long, long, long time.
It is such a high bar. It's crazy. Actually, let me ask you, what are some of your favorite comics of 2020?
Oh, I've been trying to read a lot of indie stuff this year. I mean, I think Ram V has been on fire. I loved Blue and Green, and I also loved that whole White Noise group between Giga and the stuff they were doing for Vault. That and I really loved what I went back and read the Wilds and stuff that Vita Ayala had been doing too, some former students. But What other books? I mean, in mainstream stuff, I'm a huge, I mean, Donnie and I are friends. I love what he's doing over at Marvel and also on his own stuff, Crossover and that. I tried more stuff that James has recommended to me on the side too. I mean, Department of Truth is my favorite book.
Oh my God. It's so good. It's insanely good.
I've read ahead on it, and to see him blow up this year, I mean, he was my student, and then he's like my, you know, he's my brother. Like, we talk every single day, you know, for the last 10 years.
No offense to you, but last week we did our best of, and he was my favorite writer of the year. No offense.
Oh no, he's my favorite writer of the year beyond me. Like I'm happy to see that. I hope he wins all the awards. But he, when your student like becomes someone you're learning from and a teacher to you, is no better feeling in the world. So he, I mean, his stuff has just been incredible. I really liked, he got me into Tilly Walden.
Oh yeah. And, so good.
Yeah. Right. And, what else have I mean, recently I was going back and reading a bunch of older stuff. I was reading a lot of Brubaker and Phillips, Kill or Be Killed, and Criminal, and I'm trying to think of what else. Name me some books too, and I'll tell you, like, what have you liked? And now,
oh well, Pulp from Brubaker, that was really, really good. I've really liked The Dreaming Waking Hours.
Yeah, that's Cy Spurrier. I thought that was true.
Well, that's the G. Willow Wilson's follow-up series with Nick Robles. That one's really good. But The Dreaming is amazing too.
Yeah.
Gosh, I've really liked, you know, the Dawn of X books. Hellions has been really good. Zeb Wells' sense of humor is insane.
I know. I remember back when he was doing the Gauntlet on Spider-Man, and he did that amazing, I think it was the Rhino issue or the Crocodile, the lizard. It was lizard, one. Yeah, they were so good. And the Hickman's, I mean, X-Men is fantastic. I haven't caught up on all the X of Swords stuff. I've been too buried, but
pulling off a reboot, or not, I guess we call it a reboot, like that, just, it gets me excited. Like, what would Scott Snyder's Hawks and Pox look like? Like, what would he... And what would he pull off? Like, which characters would he
explore? I have a big X-Men pitch in my brain, but again, now it would take years before I'd feel comfortable doing it, because that's such a high bar as well.
Right, know? Right.
I don't know why. I feel like I've read pretty extensively this year. Now I think I'm just tired, but I'm drawing.
There's so much. There's too much. Unless you're tapped in like me and the only hobby you have is comic books, I don't even know how you can read it all.
I know. Well, I was just at the store yesterday. I picked up Miskatonic and Scarant Hood, both of which are really good. But I think Vault has been great this year too. They've been really killing it.
Yeah.
Really. And so many Image books. I mean, and again, not to go to but Josh bringing back Birthright. I really love what he's doing over there, Josh Williamson. But also, Something is Killing the Children. I mean, James just can't stop with all these.
It's insane. He's got Wind at Boom.
I know.
Razor Blades. You better watch out. You're not going to have a job soon, Scott. He's going to be doing them all.
I told him. I said, the thing I love about what he's doing and what Lemire does, and Sentient, I also really love by Lemire. What I love about them and what I love about, you know, what Kelly Sue between Aquaman and you know, her own stuff is able to do. And what you see with some writers, it's like my favorite thing is when they're able to write across a broad spectrum of books, but always, you know, make it personal in a way that's recognizable as their stuff in some way. So James can do a YA book like Wind, and he can do something deeply adult and troubling like Department of Truth, and then something that's kind of fun in the middle, like Something is Killing Children and Batman. That to me is like, that's the goal, is to be able to write all those things with passion in a way that you're writing, you're expressing things that matter to you in wildly different medium, you know? Those are my favorite. Those are my favorite writers.
Zach Thompson was on the show a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about how he devotes an entire week to a different book. So each week is that book script.
That's what I do.
Yeah. I think he said he got it from some other writer, the idea. I forget who, though, at this point.
Immortal Hulk. Oh, and Chip's Daredevil also, I gotta say.
Yes.
Pretty incredible.
I
really like as well. I thought Lonely Receiver is really good.
Yep.
What else? I'm trying to, I don't, I'm I know I've read, I mean, it's one of those things where I'm just like, why am I not remembering?
Well, I've noticed you get quoted a lot on these books. You must get a lot of these like given to you early, before, like months before maybe even people get to read them.
I do. Yeah. I mean, I was lucky with a bunch of stuff this year with a lot of the, yeah, Vault and Image books and stuff like that. So I'm excited. I'll always give a blurb if, you know, I like the book. So I'm happy to.
I'm the same.
Yeah, to be a part of anything, you know. The thing I think is also really exciting right now, not to get like off topic in a weird way, but it's not off topic, so whatever, is the enthusiasm people are showing for indie comics all of a sudden again. You know, I think, I don't know if it's that, you know, a new audience is coming in and they're at that stage a lot of us were at in the 80s and 90s where they've gotten so much superhero material for a while through TV and film that now the TV and film stuff that's popular, like Watchmen and The Boys, is like deconstructive in a way or undercutting. And what they're looking for is almost new franchises that aren't recognizable as these corporate heroes. And they're coming to comics and driving enthusiasm for, you know, books like Department of Truth to go over 100,000, crossover, The Scumbag, all that stuff to do much better. And for us with, you know, Noctera to have a campaign that far exceeded our stuff and to watch all these Kickstarter books do well too, you know?
Yeah.
It's exciting. It feels like a moment, like an inflection point, to be totally honest, in my thinking that, you know, there's a great enthusiasm for superhero comics. I think it's going to be there. I think if we play our cards right as an industry and embrace a confluence and synergy between digital and print and YA, like graphic novel stuff, and do it in a way where they're not competitive with each other, we could really draw in huge, you know, really big and comprehensive numbers, like across different things. But I think there's also this huge audience coming in, like my kids' generation that came up on, you know, my 13, 14 year old now, he came up on manga and anime and that. And he looks at web comics and all that stuff, but he's looking for indie stuff. So he's like, Dad, would it? And that audience, I think, is coming in. And there's a big, I think there's going to be a big wave, like, you know, Image back in the day, but of real muscular, not like muscle or like tights muscular, but I mean, like powerfully both critical and commercial stuff. You can see it already with Jeff and Gary going and doing Geiger, and you see a lot of migration towards people doing indie comics again, to just kind of express the things they've been feeling the last couple of years. And also because I think there's a wave of readership coming there.
And you've got Best Check at Press now.
I do.
Do you think you'd ever do a YA book?
What?
Would you do a YA OGN or a?
I have one that's one pitch called Infernal Machines. That's pretty fun. So nice. It's in there. It's at the last tier of it. So it would be, if we started, it would be started at the end of 2021. Out of the books, the first wave of books that I'll be doing there is like the Francesco, I don't want to say everybody, because some are surprises, but, you know, Emma did the logo, Emma Price, who I love, Cy Spurrier, and Will Dennis edits it, ex-Vertigo head. So it's a whole thing. It's an actual company. So I'm really excited.
Yeah, you've got Chain coming. But you said you're going to be making announcements in the spring, probably March or April.
Yeah. Chain, Ariella Christentina, Noctera and Chain will be the first books out with Image. And then there's a whole bunch of books that we'll be announcing in different ways, but is one kind of big deck in the spring. But the fun also is honestly, like, one of the things that, I don't know, like COVID and all that, it also made me rethink a lot of being a part of the community. And, wanting to make sure that both through Best Jacket and in general, you're trying your best to do the right thing about, you know, spotlighting new people coming in and throwing your support where you can behind making the industry what you consider to be better. And so my hope with Best Jacket really is, if it keeps going the way it is, then we'll be able to help fund, whether just privately or more publicly, books by emerging creators as we go. I mean, that's my real goal. You know, as a teacher, I love being able to be a part of someone's trajectory in some small way. So
I think the last time you were on this show, you were saying you'd like to take most of the profits and just put it into other indie books to help support other creators.
Kickstarter. Yeah. I did. So yeah, I don't have any profit from that. The Kickstarter, the basically it paid off Tony and Tomeo and all that for the book, for the whole six issues of the first arc, which is great. And then the other book, the other money is going to fund Jane, which is great because it's basically funded as well now. And a little bit for the book that I was telling you about, the YA book, I think.
It sounds like you like to work. Would you call yourself a workaholic or?
Yeah. I mean,
without a doubt.
I'm not a workaholic in the way that, like, I turn it off when I mean, at the end of the day, I'm with my kids and my wife, and I'm pretty passionate about, you know, being present. There have been times when I was starting, and I was on Batman, it nearly broke up our marriage. I mean, I everything that was offered to me that I liked, I had to do and try and build my career. So I was doing Unchained and Swamp Thing and, you know, American Vampire and American Vampire spinoff and everything. And there was a point I realized, like, you know, you can't do this. And right now I feel like I'm in a position where it's staggered. So it's more like I have more work than I've ever had, but it's my work. It's my stuff. And it's also being done with friends and people we can work at our pace. It's comfortable to us that. So I feel good. Like I definitely have too much, but you know, some of it's nice. Cause
it's good to be busy.
Yeah. My wife, she actually got her first dose of the vaccine today. She's
a doctor. Oh, that's awesome.
I know. She sent me.
Oh my God. What a relief.
Yeah. You know, my dad too. Honestly, part of the goal was to make sure that I had enough stuff up and running that she would not have to work full time at the hospital if COVID got really bad again. So, you know, I was lucky in that way, and so we try and figure it out together.
Yeah. In that regard. Oh my God.
What else? Yeah, and it's funny. I mean, you get reflective. I'll say that. You know,
it's that time of year.
Yeah, and being in 10 years, you know, all the mistakes and the things you've done wrong.
This is a turning point for you, I think.
It is.
It's a new Scott Snyder we're about to explore in the spring and summer, in the whole year, really.
No, it sounds hokey, but I'm telling you the truth. With a lot of changes at DC and a lot of things, you know, at home with not just with COVID, but with Quinn, you know, getting better from his surgeries and all that stuff. Like it was over the summer. It was really over the summer into the fall. I had some kind of revelations about everything where I was like, I just want to be a better, more centered person with everything, with both how I proceed in comics and in terms of making sure that I'm being supportive of people outside myself. And then also, you know, taking enough time for me and my family and my own stuff in that way. But you know, it makes you think back on all the things you did wrong over the years too. And
that's not to dwell.
The dumb arguments and the fights or the times you overstepped this way or that way.
Right.
Yelled at your boss or the stupid shit.
In the moment, you don't realize the weight it could have later on.
Yeah. Well, it's also like, you know, it's not even, it's more just that sometimes I think along the way you don't realize that you're so focused on getting the stuff you care about and the people that are in your that you care about to make something that you really believe in this way that you don't have time to look outside and see the ways that other people are not always being given the same chances or the people are not you know getting the spotlight the same way they deserve it at different times and I don't know just stuff it. I don't need to go down a big rabbit hole with you. But my point is, I mean it, that, you know, my goal, both with the end of Death Metal, its messaging and the way I'd like to proceed with my own stuff and the person I hope to be in the community going forward is that, you know, I can't be on social media as much as I have been in the way, I don't see that as a big tool in my future in a real way. I'd like to switch over to more of a model of what James is doing, tying in with the newsletter, just because it's too distracting and too much noise on there. But I won't, you know, I think there are real ways that you can do work to spotlight and support and foreground.
Like be on a podcast.
Like being on a podcast. Yeah, absolutely. I would mention one of the people I've really, two of the people, I mean, Shay Grayson and Regine Sawyer, who I love and I've gotten to know well this year. Regine has a Lock It Down Productions where she publishes books by Emergent creators, and she runs Women in Comics, which is a fantastic organization that everybody should support as well. So yeah, just becoming more aware. That's it. You know, I've been like, how do I fight with Dan DiDio to get this thing to be what it's supposed to be?
Right. Right.
Who do I have to, you know, that, and then you do it, and then you get to the end and you're like, how do I also make sure that my passion isn't just about expressing myself through my own work? And I've tried to be pretty, over the years, I've tried to be pretty vocal about supporting other people and, you know, teaching and bringing people in. But, you know, being in a position now where I want to make it more a part of, I don't know, just more a part of my work.
It sounds like we're going to get a Zen Snyder going forward.
I hope so. I spent a lot. I had my self-destructive years when I first came in. Believe me, when I first was on Batman, I wasn't ready for that at all. You know, I came in, I think I told you last time we talked, but like, I felt like I was like, all my sports analogies are terrible because I don't really follow sports at all. So I'm going to get it all wrong. But it was like, being like a single A baseball player and then being like, one day I'll play in the majors. And they're like, you're actually pitching in game 7 of the World Series tonight.
Oh, geez. Yeah. It's a lot of pressure. Like, how do I do this right? Yeah. Just overanalyzing probably the anxiety. I can't imagine.
Oh yeah. I mean, I was a mess the whole first couple of years. I was, you know,
but now you're pulling off major events. I mean, I think
it's like,
Dark Knight's Death Metal #7. I think you just nailed that ending. They like made the event for me, that ending.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. It sort of sums up a lot of the way I feel about all of it. So I feel you guys are in a great place. I'm very excited for you.
Oh, thank you.
I'm excited for the site, excited for everything you're doing. I love talking to you all the time. So I really hope that we'll make this more of a regular thing going forward too. Is there anything I didn't answer that fans or anybody asked about Death Metal or anything that I haven't covered?
Well, I know it's not in the cards yet, but everybody in America is sort of like into that whole trilogy thing. So people are contemplating Death Metal 3 or Metal 3, I guess. Would you do you have a title in mind? What it could be called, at least?
No, I just don't know that Greg will go back to it. I mean, I'm not lying when I said it has not crossed my mind about doing a third one. Just because Greg and I have a creator on that we're working on, really excited about. So, and then he has so much he wants to do. He wants to do the Creech, and you know, we have stuff we want to do. He has stuff he wants to do at Marvel Live stuff there. We have stuff at DC still too. I do, you know, what it's a whole thing. So I don't know.
In 10 years, DC is going to have a truck filled with money and just be like, look, we need a third one.
Well, I'll tell you, I've been pretty good about trying not to. Yeah, I mean, they were that way when they did Batman with Rebirth, about staying on after Greg left, you know. But the feeling was always, like I said earlier, you know, I was scared financially at that moment, but it was more like, you know, you gotta stay exciting to yourself. Really do. I mean, I know it's hokey, and sometimes you have to take a job for the money. I've luckily not been in that position.
That's the real world.
Yeah, I haven't had to, and you know, I've been lucky that the first job offered to me at DC was like my dream job, as scary as it was. But you know, I try and give that advice to students as much as possible, is obviously if you have to do a job to get your foot in the door, anything you can do to make it yours. But once you're there, like, I don't know, I've tried not to do that. You know, you won't see me being like Black Mirror #2.
Sequel.
I have a story in my head, so I've always wanted. I'm not going to say that and then be like Mick Jagger, being like, "We won't be singing Satisfaction when we're 50."
That's true. Yeah.
Chicken dance, you know. But I'm like I'm trying. I have a lot of things in lined up, and one of them is at DC. But a lot of things lined up that I feel like are new challenges. So yeah.
Well, Scott, thank you so much for the time. We are all looking forward to Noctura in March. Undiscovered Country is ongoing. American Vampire 1976. I mean, it just goes on and on. Best Jacket Press is kicking off with Noctura. You have a big year ahead.
I do, and I forgot. Can I mention that one thing that American Vampire?
Yeah.
That one, I feel like I don't talk about enough, and it's my favorite. It's like my favorite thing I've ever written, honestly, American Vampire. And this arc is my favorite arc. Like
I love the action adventure element of it. It reminds me of like Indiana Jones at times.
Yeah, it's all the things that James was telling me the other night, 'cause he reads all of it. We trade all the time. And he was like, the series is the most purely me of anything, you know, that I do. It's where it's like the, you know, has some of the bombast of the superhero stuff, but it's just the historical stuff and it's horror. And it's so effortless, right? And I love the characters so much, you know. There's no triangulation, there's no calculation going on, where when you write superheroes, sometimes you have to be like, well, they're not going to like this idea, so how do I make them like it? Because they have preconceived notions about these heroes. How do I force them to get on board with what I want to do, even if it, you know, right. Or have to be like, what was the run before my run like? How do I, you know, create a different aesthetic and all these things to make sure that you're writing something you care about, but that's also going to land.
So many writers have come out and said, like, the audience doesn't know what they want, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not that I don't think they know what they want. I think they know what they don't want. And sometimes what you want to do is what they don't want, but you right. know it's right for you.
Sure, sure.
You have to convince them. Like, for example, I mean, one of the things that's so exhausting is like, you know, if you want to do something like, if I'm going to make Commissioner Gordon Batman, right? I know that idea is going to fall flat with people. They're going to hate it.
Yeah.
So the way I have to say is like, you have to do a story almost where you're like, Commissioner Gordon says, I know you're going to hate this and I hate it. It's so stupid. But right. we'll have some fun, and like you have to figure out a way to short circuit it them and
make right. sure. Yeah, and readers, I think, appreciate that because it shows that you care about what they are thinking.
That's all it is. To me, it's like, I care about what you're thinking. I see your concerns. Trust me. Let me try this, like that. You know, so it's that feeling. So it's not that I think you bend your story to what they want. I've mm-hmm. never done that, and I feel like, you know, because things have gone over relatively well over the years. Sometimes people don't see it anymore, but I mean, the stuff that we did was definitely not, we had a lot of anger when we did Black Mirror and gave Jim Gordon a psychotic son. And then we got a lot of anger when we introduced the Court of Owls and gave Bruce a possible brother and then redid the origin and all of it.
Sure.
But you know, you win them over. You just say, look, this is what we want to do. I hear what you're saying, but I'm going to try it. Like, give me a shot.
Yeah. And you're doing that with American Vampire now too, as well?
Yeah, well, American Vampire is just effortless. Like, American Vampire, if you're on board with it, there's no I have to convince you. It's like, it's so much what I love, everything that I love in the American history and all of it, that it's like, there's no friction between me and the audience in any way. It's just,
nice.
Like, I know what they want because it's what I want. And it's like, there's just, I feel that way about it where, you know, and this arc has all of it. So it's what is. It's very hard to, you know, I still send it to Mark Doyle, but it's like I pitched this ending back when I met with him in a pizza parlor in 2008. You
know? That's crazy.
I remember saying it's going to end in Vegas with this, this, and this. So it's very strange to be here, but I'm very, very happy with it. I'm very grateful to Rafa and to Dave McKay and Steve Wands and everyone for sticking with me this long. And same with Greg Capullo and John Glapion and FCO. That I and Jock and Francesco, and one of the things this year, and then I'll shut up, is that I'm really excited to be making stuff that I care about with all the people, so many people that have been such a seminal part of my career and have become true friends, you know, like yeah. and some people. So that's what Best Jacket's about. That's what meaning try out, you know, new creative relationships, but also there are a lot of relationships in there that are my favorite people in comics that I've gotten to. Now we're trying new things together. So
yeah, so. American Vampire 1976 number 4 comes out next week.
It does. Yeah. Death Metal is this week. American Vampire next week. Undiscovered Country still. Yeah. Is coming out. We love really happy with that series. And then March is Noctera, and then summer into fall will be Chain.
Awesome.
Yeah.
This is a good talk. I love it. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you. It was great, David. I appreciate it. Let's do it again really soon. And thank you to everybody out there for making metal. We didn't know if it would go over the fact that it's doing so well, and really appreciate it.
People need that escapism, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Even, I mean, I feel like it's weird because doing a bit like this, it's the most escapist. And then at the same time, it's about everything that we feel and think about this moment. And it's like, that's the trick of metal and all a lot of superhero stuff to me is, it's like translated into this language of total lunacy, this like lexicon of like Riddler bots and
right.
Joker dragons, but it's actually about the way you feel about this moment. So
right.
I hope people resonate too. So thank you again. I really appreciate you taking the time.